Is that a thing?
No.
I don't.
Welcome to Super True Stories. We suffer through and report back on the worst and weirdest documentaries you can stream. I'm Dave Hunt.
And I'm Jamie Hunt. And right now I'm really mad at Leonard Nimoy.
You're not mad at me.
Both of you are in the doghouse tonight.
You're not mad at our super fan Brian for suggesting this?
Brian, you're also in the doghouse. Thanks for this wonderful suggestion, she said sarcastically.
Did you know that this show existed before Brian suggested it?
I did not. Did you?
Yes. About a year ago, Axel and I did an episode on Y2K that was hosted by Leonard Nimoy. And around that time, I discovered that after the original Star Trek was canceled, but before the movies started to come out, Leonard needed something to do. So he hosted, I think it's like 150 episodes of this show called In Search Of.
Oh my gosh. He obviously needed the dough.
There's a long, proud history, and proud is in quotes, of Star Trek actors taking questionable side jobs.
What on earth? I mean, don't they have enough money from Star Trek that they have to go out and do these absolutely terrible, quote-unquote, documentary series? No.
My guess is that some of these episodes are less offensively bad than others, but we watched two episodes on ESP. And they are the most 70s documentaries about ESP that you could hope to find.
And just really to be clear, not ESPN, which autocorrect kept trying to change for me when I was taking notes.
That's funny. My computer knows better and knows that I would never be writing about sports.
Come on, we're recording this during the Super Bowl. Do you think I watch ESPN?
We watched two episodes about ESP, and the first one is related to animal ESP.
ESP stands for extrasensory perception. It covers things like psychic powers and telekinesis and that kind of stuff.
Yes. We get, at the beginning of this episode, a setup that reminded me of that Disney film. Do you know the one that I'm talking about?
Homeward Bound.
Yeah. This dog gets left behind while the family is moving. But Bobby, instead of just becoming a stray, I guess, he somehow follows them all the way to their new residence in Portland, which, if true, is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and the dog's name is Bobby, and it kind of looks like Lassie.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept thinking, like, are we going to run into Timmy at some point? Like, is Timmy going to be in a well on this journey, and that's what this is all about?
They're like, well, we can't find him. Him and the dog, I guess, are on their own.
They do like a cursory glance around the neighborhood and then just run to their cars. Now's our chance.
Yeah, these are the worst parents ever.
Right. So they call this phenomenon psi trailing. And for some reason, we are expected to believe that a family could project their location 2,000 miles to a dog.
Yes. The first expert that we meet is J.B. Rhein. He's quote-unquote America's dean of parapsychology.
That's not a thing. America is not a college.
If it were, I don't think we would have a parapsychology department. Although maybe we would. Maybe that's the point we've devolved to.
Yes. That's like half of the students are enrolled in that program.
Right. Rhein says that they'd like to have more evidence.
You don't say.
And they admit that these anecdotes are not proof.
You don't say.
But then we meet Dr. Hans Esser. He puts a dog in an isolated soundproof chamber, and they try to have the human generate emotion that the dog then somehow reacts to.
They show the films and the photos that the owner is reacting to, and the owner really, really smiles and grins at a photo of people jogging. Like, it's the most excited he's been in his entire life.
It makes you wonder if the dog is not reacting simply because the dog knows that this is all bullshit.
Right.
Get a picture of Farrah Fawcett up on there, and then maybe. That I believe.
And then they say, well, there was a correlation in a few instances. And they kind of say like, well, this wasn't conclusive.
Finding laboratory proof of animal ESP is most difficult.
Almost as if it wasn't a real thing?
Although at this point, I started to think that Hobie might be psychic.
Hobie is our dog.
Yes. And he stares at me creepily a lot.
Do you feel like you're picking up messages from him?
I feel as though he is trying to tell me something and my psychic powers are too weak for me to pick up what it is. But there's no other explanation, per the scientists in this documentary, for his behavior than he is trying to project something to me psychically.
Well, next, Leonard takes us to out-of-body experiences so that we can have multiple layers of bullshit.
Right.
We meet a person named Sherry Green who says that she's able to have these out-of-body experiences routinely. They take Sherry and her kitten, Jill.
We already have a dog named Bobby. Apparently, the 70s were when you gave your pets people names.
They put Sherry in a room where they can monitor her. They put Jill in this room where there's like a grid of numbers.
Which appear to serve no purpose.
Yeah, I thought, like, is she going to try to, like, think of a number and see if Jill goes to the number or something like that? But then I remembered that Jill is just a fucking cat and can't fucking read and doesn't know what numbers are. What they do is Sherry has this supposed out-of-body experience, and whenever she has this, Jill seems to get calmer.
The cat is calmed down because it has been in there for a period of time.
Well, they say that they did this 33 times.
Oh my God, that poor cat.
Well, they admit that whether the kitten saw or felt her presence, no one can say.
You don't say.
But there does seem to be this correlation.
So we have one psychic kitten. I don't understand how they think that this proves anything. This is painful.
It gets weirder because the next thing that we explore is psychokinesis.
Yeah.
We go to the Mind Science Foundation in San Antonio, which is still a thing. Dr. William Broad is conducting an experiment on a Siamese fighting fish. And this is bizarre.
Yeah, I got angry here at this documentary. For what it was trying to tell me that it's telling me, it wasn't telling me.
They take this Siamese fighting fish. They will fight another male. They will fight themselves if they see themselves in a mirror. So they put this fish in the tank, and they have a mirror hooked up to a random generator. What they discover is that even though the mirror is supposed to be only appearing half the time, when the fish is in there, the mirror shows up more frequently than it should be based on a 50% random occurrence.
And the most simple explanation...
The most simple explanation of that is that the fish is somehow influencing that generator, although there's no physical connection between the two.
This fish is too dumb to know that the thing in the mirror is itself, but it's somehow projecting its will to this random generator? Come on.
Because it likes fighting so much.
Right. I can't. This is so ridiculous.
The last person that we meet is a vet named Dr. Marvin Kane. He talks about how one of his greatest allies is Beatrice Lidecker, and part of her last name is correct.
And you'll never guess what Beatrice does for a living.
Beatrice says that she likes to think of herself as a diagnostic tool to a veterinarian. And I agree, she is a tool.
Yes. Why are there so many pet psychics on this podcast? So many pet psychics. I feel like I've made the wrong career choices. Like, I could just be making up stuff about animals and apparently earn a healthy living.
Well, we don't know that.
I guess.
Dr. Kane put her through a test where he had a jumping horse that had fractures in its legs, and he didn't tell Beatrice what was wrong with the horse. She just went and used her mind to diagnose the horse.
Because anyone with a brain would know that a jumping horse would get fractures in its front legs.
And the horse is like limping.
Right, right. The horse was limping.
Well, I think it's its leg.
It doesn't take a psychic to solve this one. Oh, but then it gets worse, y'all.
We watched an episode titled Other Voices, and once I discovered what it was, I knew it was our destiny.
This is what we were born to do?
At least for this episode of our podcast.
Oh, God.
Other Voices is about ESP and plants.
Yes. Yes. You heard him correctly.
What are they saying? To whom or what are they talking? And how can we communicate with them?
The person who wrote the script for The Happening watched this episode.
M. Night Shyamalan's career all traces back to this.
Every leaf has a story, Dave.
The first scientist that we meet is Marcel Vogel, who is a research chemist in San Jose, California. And he's devoted years to studying plant behavior with quote-unquote sophisticated machines and what he calls his mind's inner eye.
Is that a thing?
No.
I don't. Oh my God. This person somehow got a PhD.
I think he got the PhD before he started coming out with the crazy ideas.
You don't think he used his mind's eye to earn that dissertation?
No. One of the things that they do is they get this woman named Dorothy, this little old lady, basically, who doesn't like rock music.
Harsh music has always bothered Mrs. Riddelick.
Yes. So she does this experiment, and she says that she uses 75 plants, and then she starts to list them all.
There were some vegetable plants, some flowering plants. I used green beans, squash. For the filming, used our Colorado carnations, petunias, marigolds.
Pine nut. Just kept going.
She used a great many kinds of plants. As if this would somehow reduce the chance that these things are happening randomly. And then she gets two little areas set up, and then she plays classical music on one side with one group of plants and rock music to the other plants. And she discovers that the plants that had the classical music grew towards the speaker that the music was coming out of, but the hard rock plants withered and died.
This whole documentary is an anti-rock screed.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember this, but early in the run of Mythbusters, they did this experiment.
I don't remember that.
They did it a little more scientifically.
What?
But the plants that did the best were the heavy metal plants.
Miss Riddelick would not be happy with this.
Yes, if she were still alive to see that, I'm sure she would have written a terse letter to the Discovery Channel.
Shaking her cane at the TV.
We're told that it could only be the quality of music that determined the reaction of the plants.
Right, that's the only possible option out there.
Leonard does admit that plants don't have ears. But he says that what we call a sound wave is merely one form of energy, and scientists know energy takes many forms. And then we meet this photographer dude.
So he takes photos of plants and purports that they show an aura, but it looks like it's just infrared photography.
Apparently he's doing some sort of electrical charge to the leaf.
One fantastic experience we had was photographing the discharge that takes place in the atmosphere, in the air. Air is very necessary for these images. If there's no air, if there's no atmosphere, there's no image.
There's also no you, Kendall.
Right? I could say in this documentary, you don't say, like 100 times. Like, yes, you need air.
They pluck a leaf from a plant and bruise the leaf. And then they notice that this aura is fading away. But if you take someone who has the reputation of having a green thumb and you hold that person's hand over the mutilated leaf, then the aura becomes more brilliant.
Any thinking person would watch this and be like, oh my God, come on. How are we supposed to buy this?
Well, you're supposed to believe Kendall.
Kendall, who looks stoned out of his mind.
Kendall, who says,
somewhere in between this very personal world, one that I feel, one that I live in, and the other world that we, the ordinary world that we live in every day, that's me and the worlds out there, there's this whole new other possibility.
He has to be high.
He has to be. Because none of that made any sense.
Leonard says that Aristotle and Plutarch thought that trees had perception and were capable of passion and reason, and we get to meet Cleve Baxter. Cleve is a polygraph expert who's conducted lie detector tests for the Army and the CIA, and so that led him to try attaching some electrodes to a plant.
And this calls into question lie detector tests everywhere.
It certainly calls into question Cleve.
He attaches the lie detector test to the plant and then is like inflicting pain on himself. And he's trying to detect if the plant is picking up on his distress.
Yes.
And this is what the documentary says.
For whatever reason, the experiment fails.
For whatever reason.
They give us a couple potential options.
Perhaps Baxter has performed it too often. His reaction may not have been genuine.
And so, based on that theory, they haul out one of the staff members of the In Search Of show, named Kay, and Baxter's gonna cut her up instead.
What the hell, Kay? You need to go straight to HR.
No kidding.
He literally cuts her hand. It's like deep enough that she looks like she's in pain, and there's blood coming out.
We also learn that to increase the pain, he pours iodine on the wound.
Kay, get out of there.
He says that there was a spike on the polygraph when he was doing this. Baxter can only conclude that this is the reaction to the pain felt by another living being.
That's the only conclusion. The only possible conclusion.
We cut back to Leonard briefly during a little interstitial. Leonard is mostly unremarkable during this.
Except now.
He's wearing these very 70s gray pants and a red shirt with a blue sport coat over it. And he's standing with his fists on his hips like he's Superman.
I made the same note.
Did you?
Yes. And it makes no sense in context.
Why is he standing like that?
I don't know. And it distracted me. I don't even know what he said.
I had the same experience. I didn't write down a thing that he said.
No, because it was so jarring.
Well, I think he's just setting up the next experiment with Baxter.
Which is insane.
Baxter puts yogurt in a test tube, and then he puts silver wires in the yogurt and attaches those wires to his polygraph.
He's lie detecting yogurt. And I will tell you something, yogurt is a lie. Boston cream pie yogurt? That's not true. It doesn't taste like Boston cream pie. It tastes like yogurt.
Yeah, every yogurt tastes like yogurt.
Anytime it's trying to tell you that it tastes like something other than yogurt, it's a lie. Yogurt doesn't need to be lie detected. It's sort of like, how do you tell Trump is lying? His lips move. How do you tell yogurt is lying? It's yogurt. It's a dirty, dirty lie.
Perpetuated by Big Yogurt?
If this documentary had any say in it, it's perpetuated by the yogurt itself. Oh, I can't.
Leonard says,
does the simple life form at work in the yogurt have feelings?
No.
How wide is the gulf between man and plant?
Very.
If there is a gulf at all.
There is.
Baxter has another glass with some yogurt nearby. He takes a capsule of antibiotics and stirs it into the yogurt to see if the yogurt in the test tube is upset that the other yogurt is dying.
Oh my God.
Jamie, they devoted half of this episode to this guy.
He's trying to gauge the empathy of yogurt.
Yes.
Who sits and eats yogurt and thinks, I wonder if yogurt is capable of feeling empathy?
The stuff that's alive in yogurt is bacteria. I mean, the plant is more complicated than the yogurt.
I can't with this guy. He says he sees no difference between wiring a finger and wiring yogurt, which means he should be fired.
But you're being too dismissive, Jamie, because he tries another experiment.
Mm-hmm.
This time he gets a fresh beaker of yogurt. He still has the test tube yogurt hooked up to the polygraph. And he puts some milk into the beaker, which he says will be like feeding the yogurt.
Right.
And this time there's a spike on the polygraph. And he says,
it's not being fed anything. And yet it somehow is aware that the other yogurt is being fed.
It's using ESP.
It can sense that other bacteria is eating.
Oh my God. Dave.
I think we need to talk about the bow that Leonard ties this episode up in.
Sure.
If you've ever awakened in the night with the knowledge that something has happened to someone you love and found out you were right, you might have wondered who or what was the messenger. One intriguing idea presented by this trip through a world of other voices is the possibility that plants carried the message.
Again, this is very 70s. Like, the soundtrack to this sounds kind of like the bleeps and bloops from an Atari 2600.
Yes.
As the races of man speak in different languages, so do the varieties of plants manifest their voices in different ways. For the time being, however, we must listen to them through our machines. One day, those machines may be unnecessary.
We're 40 years after this documentary. I'm still not talking to plants.
No. Well, Jamie, we watched two episodes about ESP. Did you learn anything?
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't fucking know either.
So I learned we shouldn't eat anything because everything has feelings.
Even the yogurt.
Right. A plant grows from the ground. It's its own little self-contained system. Maybe it has feelings. It's a big stretch, but let's go there. But now we're saying yogurt has feelings also. So where does it end? Every single thing we eat has feelings.
It's bad for you to eat your feelings, but apparently it's good for you to eat other living beings' feelings.
If an apple has feelings, if a yogurt has feelings, if these things have feelings, do we need to be like playing them soothing lullabies before we eat them so that we're eating at least positive feelings? Are our bad moods because the bacteria is in a bad mood?
Oh, I'm absolutely certain there's somebody out there saying that.
Okay, hear me out. If you wanted to have a very healthy life, are you taking all your food, putting it in a room, playing some semi-classical music, then consuming it so that all the things inside your body are happy? Maybe you stop aging because you have all this like happy stuff inside you. Maybe I just discovered the fountain of youth.
This sounds like the basis for an actual fad diet.
I think I might start it because people are gullible, which is the second thing I learned in this documentary. People are gullible, especially Kay. Like, don't let somebody cut your hand up for an experiment to see if a plant can feel things. So those are the things I learned. I am curious about what you learned, Dave.
A couple things. I think this is the first thing that you and I have watched together for this podcast from the 70s. The thing that they do is they ask these ridiculous questions with the idea that the answer could somehow possibly be yes.
Yes.
But they don't answer it because it would be batshit insane to think that the answer is actually yes.
Right.
But batshit insane people watch television all the time and are like, oh, I never thought of it that way. I guess it is possible.
I used to work with a lady once who printed out one of those Nigerian prince emails. And when I got into work was like, oh, Jamie, our prayers have been answered. And that kind of person would watch this documentary and think that her yogurt is trying to talk to her.
Yeah, I know people who would absolutely watch something like this and just be like, huh, well, maybe.
I know you know people.
Yeah, I know you know who I know.
Yes. And it's you, Brian.
It's not Brian. The other thing that I discovered is that Cleve wrote a book. It's called Primary Perception, Biocommunication with Plants, Living Foods, and Human Cells. The mass market paperback goes for $333.70.
What?
So maybe you should write that book.
I've got to go. I've got something to do. I've got to develop a whole diet around yogurt talking to you.
Well, Jamie, there's a lot of episodes of this show.
Yep.
This is a deep well that Brian reminded me of.
Thanks, Brian. This was painful, y'all. Please do not try to watch these without supervision.
There's a little bit of a nostalgia that I have for Leonard because I watched the original Star Trek when I was a kid growing up. But that said, this still didn't do much for me.
The only thing I've really seen Leonard Nimoy in is the Star Trek movies that you've had me watch, and then he was in Fringe for a little bit.
Yes.
I mean, this is junk science.
Oh, absolutely. It's the junkiest science.
Right. And there are naive people out there who might be buying into this. And I guess there's no real harm to them if they think their yogurt's talking to them, unless they choose to starve themselves because they don't want to eat something that's trying to talk to them. That said, Star Trek isn't exactly the most scientifically sound television show of all time.
Star Trek was looking forward into this idea that these things could be happening like in the distant future, you know, 500 years from now. Whereas this show is saying, yeah, you can talk to a leaf with your mind right now.
Right.
So there is a little bit of a difference.
Again, thank you, Brian, for this wonderful suggestion.
Yes, thanks, Brian.
If you like what Brian has suggested for us, we are at Twitter at SuperTrueStory and on Facebook at SuperTrueStories. In both those locations, you might be able to talk to the actual Brian and share with him your thoughts. You can also share your thoughts by giving us a review, sharing the podcast with your friends. Keep us going. Otherwise, we're watching these things for no reason.
For our own personal betterment?
I don't feel better.
Well, we should also thank Tomb Dragomir for the use of our theme song, which is Mexicana Massacre off of his album Instrumental Psycho Synth. And if you're looking for other great podcasts, check out our friends at 6 Foot Plus and at the Projection Booth. And I don't think I'm going to be able to get Jamie to watch more episodes of In Search Of anytime soon. But now it's hanging out there as a threat.
Right. Now I'm motivated.
We have to find something better than this.
Oh.
Because this is what we can always default back to.
Each episode was 22 minutes, and I had to stop multiple times to just get my brain out of it.
I would never just watch this.
No.
No.
Well, on that note, I'm going to go have some yogurt.
Oh, I'll be listening for the tiny screams coming from the kitchen.
I'm Jamie Hunt.
And I'm Dave Hunt.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Is done here.
What do you mean your work is done? You didn't do anything.
Didn't I?